Checked with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi and welcome. This is episode 125 of the Robots podcast. My name is Jana, and today we will hear about the need for protecting robots from Kate Darling, IP research specialist at the MIT Media Lab in Cambridge, Massachusetts. But first, as always, let's take a look at the latest developments in robotics with Christine.
Thank you, Jana. A new startup accelerator for hardware and robotics-related projects in Boston has closed its first funding round. As of May, Bolt will offer startups a six-month intensive program focused on growth. Unlike many other accelerators, it offers shop equipment and professional engineering staff, in addition to cash, mentorship, and industrial relations. With seasoned roboticists, including former VP of Engineering at iRobot, Scott Miller, and CEO of Kiva Systems, Mick Mounts, as backers, we likely have some interesting robotics companies to look forward to. U.S. company Boston Dynamics has released a new video of their big dog robot. In the video, the robot mule, which you may remember from previous reports, is shown equipped with an arm picking up a cinder block. It then uses the strength of its legs and torso to dynamically throw the block. The cinder block weighs about 16 kilograms or 35 pounds. The best throw recorded by the researchers is just above 5 meters or 17 feet. The research project is funded by the U.S. Army's Corporate Research Laboratory, ARL. One goal of the project is to investigate how the dynamic, whole-body approach used by human athletes can be used to enhance the performance of advanced robots. For more information on Bolt and Boston Dynamics Big Dog Robot, visit us at robohub.org.
As robots become more accessible, social, and even lovable, some ask whether it might be a good idea to introduce rules and norms for robot interactions that will prevent humans from forming unethical and potentially illegal bonds with their robotic companions. Kate Darling is passionate about robot ethics and organized a workshop at this year's LIFT conference in Geneva called Harming and Protecting Robots. Can we? Should we? In this workshop, participants explored the psychology of hurting and killing robots that were designed to bond with humans. Sabine spoke to Kate about her contribution to the LIFT conference and about the controversial subject of robot protection.
Hi, Kate. Welcome to Robots.
Hi.
Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name is Kate Darling. I'm a research specialist at the MIT Media Lab, and I do intellectual property research. And I'm also doing a PhD in intellectual property and innovation policy.
Intellectual property. Can you tell us a bit more about your background?
So I went to law school in Switzerland. So I'm a lawyer by background, and then I started my PhD, which is more law and economics focused.
And how do robots fit into the picture?
Well, I've always loved robots and been fascinated by robots. So my mother has slowly come to terms with the fact that I'm going to have robots instead of children. She now tells our relatives that. But now, especially, you know, being at the Media Lab where a lot of robotics work happens and being, you know, in that community, I've started to get very interested in issues that relate to law and ethics.
At LIFT just last month, you organized a workshop. Can you tell us a bit more about this workshop, which did involve robotics?
I did. So our workshop, we tried to test whether people felt differently about social robots than they would everyday objects like toasters. That was kind of the goal of the workshop. So we had 24 people, and we had four groups, and we got four Pleos, which are very cute robotic dinosaur toys that interact with you and that people tend to anthropomorphize very strongly and bond with. And we had these groups play with them and name them and perform different tasks and just interact with them for 1.5 hours. And then we forced them to torture and kill them, or at least we tried. What happened was that they couldn't do it, or they had a lot of difficulty doing it at the end of the workshop, which is kind of what we were going for.
So what does it look like when you tell someone to try and torture a Pleo? Like, what do they try to do?
Well, after, you know, playing with them and bonding with them, we started testing the limits. Like, we would try and get them to hit them, or and then I guess we had them restrain them. We had them punish them where they could choose their own punishment. And then we had, like, different tools and weapons, and we wanted them to torture them and in the end destroy them, which they really had trouble doing. So we actually had to... I was expecting to have all of them destroyed, but in the end, I told one group that they could save their own Pleo if they destroyed another group's, and they still couldn't do it. They tried, but they just couldn't manage. And then in the end, I said that all of the robots would be destroyed if someone didn't step up to the plate and axe this one robot. And finally someone did, and then there was just silence in the room.
Did they really axe it with an axe?
With a hatchet.
Why do you think that is? Why do people have trouble killing these Pleos?
I think that these Pleos, well, and this is how they're designed, but also they tend to press our social buttons, or we tend to have this reaction to them that we wouldn't have to other objects because they play on certain social cues that we immediately recognize and immediately respond to, sometimes even, you know, subconsciously.
I mean, I did a lot of robotics. I even had a pink robot made for me, a pink flying robot, which I loved. I loved that robot. But I also destroyed a lot of robots, and I knew that they were just things. Isn't that the way it should be?
Well, first of all, what kind of a person are you?
A bad person. I'm an evil robot killer. I don't kill them on purpose.
Well, no, what's really interesting to me is that even a lot of people who work closely with robots or build robots, even they are susceptible to reacting to these social robots in ways that are unexpected. So for me, the way that I got into this at all was that I got a Pleo, and I bought it because I was fascinated by the technology that's in it. It can do a lot of cool stuff. But when I was showing it off to my friends, if you hold Pleos up by the tail, they simulate that they're very upset. So... in the beginning, that was fascinating. And then when my friends started to do it, I started to tell them to put it down, and that's enough. And then I would pet it to comfort it because it was still upset. And I was like, that's really interesting. Like, I know how this thing works. And if even I am reacting this way, how does a child react, or an elderly person, or someone who doesn't understand the functionality of what they're interacting with? So I think that as lines get blurry, it's harder to just say, well, this is just an object, and it's harder to make that distinction clear to people.
Did you bring your own Pleo?
Hell no.
So should we be protecting these robots, and why?
Well, so I haven't conclusively answered the question for myself whether we should, like, have an actual law protecting them, but two reasons we might want to think about enacting some sort of abuse protection for these objects is, first of all, because people feel so strongly about it. So one of the reasons that we don't let people, you know, cut off cats' ears and set them on fire is that people feel strongly about that type of thing. And so we have laws protecting that type of abusive animals. And another reason that we could want to protect robotic objects that interact with us socially is to deter behavior that could be harmful in other contexts. So if a child doesn't understand the difference between a Pleo and a cat, you might want to prevent the child from kicking both of them. And in the same way, you might want to protect the subconscious of adults as well, or of society in general, by having us treat things that we tend to perceive as alive the same way we would treat living objects. Also, another another example to illustrate this is that often in animal abuse cases, when animals are abused in homes, when this happens, this will often trigger a child abuse case for the same household if there are children, because this is behavior that tends to translate.
So it's really about protecting robots for the sake of the humans, not for the sake of the robots.
Yes. I mean, currently we're still at a stage where robots are not, don't have like the inherent intelligence or sentience or feel pain or any of the type of thing that in science fiction movies warrants their protection. But there could still be reasons to protect them because of what we project onto them and because of how we see ourselves in them.
I hadn't thought at all about the aspect of protecting them sort of as a mechanism for protecting other human beings. Could we imagine putting alarms in these robots to sort of raise red flags if they get mistreated so that people do check out how they behave with real humans?
I've never thought of that. That's an interesting thing. Maybe the Pleos are collecting data on who holds them up by the tail, and there's a database of people.
I'm sure it's really bad, actually. I was talking to a professor, and she does robots for autistic children, and she put this robot in a museum, and people just said horrible, horrible things to this robot. They've treated this robot absolutely not like they would treat a fellow human being. So it would be interesting just for the sake of collecting the data, of seeing, you know, if people intrinsically are mean to these robots.
That would be interesting. I never thought of that. That also ties into another concern with social robotics, which is privacy concerns with this technology. Like, we could be collecting all this data, and there are no laws preventing us from doing so.
That's true. You mentioned the toaster before, and blurry lines. So what should we be protecting in terms of social robots?
Well, okay, so that's a tough question, because I feel like there's a whole spectrum of, you know, the way that people feel about handling these things. And any line that you draw, if we're talking about a legal rule, is going to be arbitrary. On the other hand, that's what the law does all the time, draws these arbitrary lines. So if we were to say, or if studies were to show that people feel most strongly about robots that are embodied and that are to a certain degree autonomous and that interact with us socially and are specifically designed to do so, then we might want to create a legal rule at least protecting that type of robot. That's a way we could draw a distinction.
Do you have a set of concrete actions that we can take in establishing robot rights?
Well, I think the first step is definitely to start a dialogue about it, to get people to take the issue seriously. And then if enough people support it, I mean, that's basically how we've gotten animal abuse laws and other laws that are similar to pass. So generate a dialogue, get the issue taken seriously, and then push for legislation if we feel that that's a necessary step.
Who's working on these questions right now? Is it mostly lawyers, or are you teaming up with roboticists or, you know, the general public?
Well, so my main goal right now is to try and get more lawyers and roboticists to talk with each other, and also to talk to psychologists, to talk to sociologists, because I feel like our fields are overlapping and are going to overlap, and there's not enough interaction between the fields.
In the law field, is robotics still mystified? Do they understand more how it works than the general public? Or that's also sort of a lot of work that we need to do, maybe on the roboticist side?
I feel like there are a few really cool people in law who tend to show up at, like, the We Robot conference. That's the intersection of law and robotics. But in general, people don't take these issues seriously because they don't understand enough about robotics, and we really need to have more dialogue between the disciplines.
You co-taught a class at Harvard about robot rights. Can you tell us a bit more about what this class was about?
So, yeah, this class was more of a playful, philosophical class, and we did discuss the issues that I've just been discussing here, but we also kind of looked into the further future and, like, beyond the next few decades, and had a philosophical discussion about robot rights the way that, you know, it's often brought up in science fiction movies and stories. And we just talked about, it was Harvard Law students, so we were talking about the legal implications of robotic technology in general. It was really interesting.
What are some of the most pressing questions that come up in these classes?
Well, I think that certainly, you know, our bonding to social robots raises a slew of ethical issues, not just, and especially when children and our elderly people are involved. Also, what one thing that always comes up is sex robots and the type of ethical issue that's raised when you can simulate sexual partners and simulate consent to a certain extent, and also like what this means for sexual fetishes or things like pedophilia. Like, what if someone starts manufacturing a 12-year-old boy robot? Is that okay? Is it something that we want to encourage or discourage as a society? These are all issues that we're going to be facing within the next few decades, and the sooner we start talking about them, the better. Of course, in these classes, people also generally want to talk about what happens when the robots do become like us or similar to us. And that's a fun discussion to have. I do think it's a little bit premature.
So is it the time right now for concrete action or still to have these discussions? Because really, it's just an uncharted territory.
That's true. I think the first step is definitely to start discussions because, you know, I mean, in our communities, people will have serious discussions about it. If you go a little bit outside, people will automatically laugh at you for even bringing this up. So just convincing people that it's worthy of a discussion, like the distinction between a toaster and a social robot, is the first step. And then, the sooner we can find solutions for the issues that we see, the better, because law is always, you know, decades behind the actual technology.
So will we need to have this actual boy robot before someone tries to pass a law, or can we pass laws before something sort of damaging happens?
Are you asking about the way I think it should be or the way it's likely to happen?
I guess both.
I think we should, since certain developments are fairly foreseeable, we should talk about them and maybe even find solutions for them now. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to have to see certain things before society sufficiently wakes up to call for action.
So your talk at Lyft was about the adult entertainment industry and also on the fact that it drives technology. Do you see any technology in robotics being driven by the porn industry?
Less than I expected, actually. There are some advances in teledildonics. They have real dolls. I'm certain we're going to see sex bots at some point. Right now, it seems like it's too expensive to really do anything with. It's certainly something that's going to happen, though.
And more generally, how do you imagine the future of social robots?
The future of social robots? Well, I definitely think that we are going in a direction of developing more and more of this social technology. I think that that's something that companies are interested in, that we as a society might even be interested in, because you can use this socially coercive technology for a lot of things, like education or like health purposes. Or there are a dozen applications where it can be really useful and already is very useful. And I think that we're going to see some significant advancements in, you know, companion robots, robots that function as companions, especially as prices drop.
Since I have an expert in IP, I wanted to ask you as well about sort of the IP questions that arise in robotics and if you've looked at them.
I haven't really looked. I guess the only one I can think of off of the top of my head that I find fascinating is when we automate the generation of works of authorship, like when robots are writing news articles, who owns the copyright to that and who should own the copyright, and does it still make sense to have copyright in that? But that's kind of a fun thought experiment, and I don't feel like it's one of the main issues in robotics.
And maybe you, for the next 1 or 2 years, what are your next steps?
Well, so I need to finish my PhD, first of all, and then I would really like to work more on the intersection of law and robotics, not just on ethical issues, but also on issues of privacy, of liability, and all of these issues where I feel like we need to start talking about them sooner than later.
You did mention privacy before. What are the big questions that you have in terms of privacy?
Well, privacy, I mean, for me, there are a couple different aspects, but I guess what interests me most right now is the aspect of when you have socially coercive technology and you can get people to reveal information that they otherwise wouldn't reveal, what that means and what we should do to discourage that or prevent it, or whether we need to discourage or prevent that, and who needs to be responsible for that. I mean, we have a lot of roboticists working on technologies that could have major privacy implications or could be like hacked to have major privacy implications. And I don't feel like it's their job to be fully conscious and aware of all the implications. I feel like it's the job of lawyers and privacy law specialists and other people to come in, understand these technologies and figure out how to regulate them.
I guess there's sort of two sides to the story for you. One side is that you like your Pleo, that it's a really cool social robot and that you're interested in this technology. And the other side is seeing all the risk that's involved when you see these technologies. How do you sort of, put those two things together? Do you get annoyed by robots that are social? Do you think it's a cool technology and we just need to frame it?
I think that, like, every technology can be used for good and evil, right? I mean, there are going to be incredibly useful and great uses that come of it. And there's always going to be the potential to abuse technology or use it in a way that's not socially desirable. And, I mean, we need to start recognizing the issues and start trying to push it in the directions that we want.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Kate, for joining us on Robots.
Thank you.
And that's all for today's episode. You can visit our website at robotspodcast.com to comment on this episode, learn more about Kate's work, or find further episodes to listen to. The Robots Podcast will be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Protect with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.